Today, what we're going to look at is a few verses from the Sermon on the Mount. Just a few tidbits from the very beginning of the Sermon on the Mount. And during our time of silence, we had Tara read some of the Beatitudes. And what we're going to be looking at are the verses that come right after those Beatitudes. And I want to just kind of set the stage for us, show us where we are. What has happened is Jesus is with his followers, and he's gaining crowds, and he's gaining in popularity, and people are beginning to follow him. And what happens is he gives this sermon in the book of Matthew, chapter 5 to 7, it's recorded. And he gets up and begins to speak to these crowds. And this is what he says. He says, "Blessed are the poor in spirit. Blessed are those who mourn. Blessed are the merciful. Blessed are the meek. Blessed are the pure in heart. Blessed are the ones who are persecuted. Blessed are the ones who hunger and thirst." And what he says after that is, "They're ready for my kingdom, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven." What Jesus Christ is doing in this sermon is he is sharing with his people, with his followers, with these crowds, that his kingdom is coming. And he also knows something else. He knows that his kingdom has not yet come, and the world is not as it should be. So he says something like, "Blessed are those who mourn." As anyone knows, as all of us know who have gone through a time of mourning, the world is not as it should be. So the heart that can still mourn is ready for the kingdom. He says, "Blessed are the poor in spirit." Have any of you ever gone through a time where your spirit just feels poor and dry? You're ready for the kingdom. You're still feeling deeply. "Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness." Blessed are those who hunger for, blessed are those who are merciful, because they'll get mercy. Blessed are all of these people who are hoping for this kingdom. And Jesus says to the people around him, he says, "You are blessed. You are ready to hear about my kingdom, and my kingdom is coming, and you're going to be my followers, and you're going to have a part in this kingdom, and you're going to be something. You're going to have a use and a purpose in this kingdom." And those are the verses that we're going to look at today. Right after the Beatitudes, he gives them two pictures of what they're going to be to help bring in this kingdom. And if you guys could put the slide up. Also, I want to thank Alec and Dan also for helping and running the slides today as well. After he reads his Beatitudes, and you can, if you want to follow along in the Bible, you can turn to Matthew 5, verses 13 to 16. It's on page 786. And he comes to these people, a crowd just like us today, a crowd of people that have been following Jesus for some time, but are in varying different degrees of their faith. Some people are probably in that crowd today and just overhearing and listening on. Some people have been following Jesus for a few years or had almost committed their lives to him, but one day would even abandon him and run from him. But there were people that were right now listening and following and seeking to follow Jesus. And he comes to this crowd and he says two things to them. He says, "You are the salt of the earth. You are the light of the world." Now we're going to look at each one of those in their turn. But before we get into salt and then light, I want to say a few initial things about what Jesus said to them. Notice he doesn't say, if you do something, if you can do all these things that I'm going to set out for you, then you will become salt, then you will become light. He doesn't say that. Instead, he comes to them and tells them who they are. Jesus Christ sets our identity. Jesus Christ comes to that crowd. He comes to us today and says, "You are salt, you are light." Not because you've done all these things or made yourself worthy, but because just by being around me, just by coming to me, I establish who you are. And I'm telling you that you are salt, whether you like it or not. And you are light, whether you like it or not, or whether you understand it or not. He tells us who we are. And the second thing I want us to see before we go in is that what he tells us is that we have a purpose and that we're something that he wants to use. We are salt and we are light, and we will see that those are two very important things, and God has chosen to use us, every single one of us. All right, let's look at the first sentence he says. "You are the salt of the earth." Now, I have a question for us. What does salt do? I bet most of you probably have a pretty good idea of what salt does. Salt does two really important things back in that day and today as well. Salt gives flavor and taste to life, and salt preserves. Human life would be insipid and corrosive if not for the presence of Christians living as salt in this world. Salt lives to preserve things, to keep things from falling into decay, from keep things from being corrosive and ugly. Salt keeps things. It keeps meat. It keeps things fresh. It preserves in this world. And salt gives flavor and taste to this world. And Jesus says to them, you are salt. The next thing we would think of is, how does salt do that? How is salt able to give flavor to this world? How is salt able to keep things from decay? How does it prevent corruption? What you immediately see if you think about salt is that salt must penetrate what it seeks to preserve. Salt must be ingrained and worked into meat to keep it from decaying. Salt has to be a part of what it seeks to preserve or give flavor to. Salt that is 3 or 4 inches away from your food on the dinner table does nothing. It's out on the table, but if it's not in what you're eating, it does nothing. If you leave meat out and leave salt away from it, but just put it in the same room, it doesn't do anything. Salt has to be connected to what it's working in. And the second thing about salt is salt by itself doesn't really have a whole lot of value. Salt finds its value by being connected to other things. Salt by itself is nasty. Do me a favor. I was thinking about this, and the next time you're baking cookies, or the next time you're doing anything like that, and you're putting salt in, you're putting a tablespoon of salt or a teaspoon of salt, instead of putting it in the cookies, just take it and gulp it for yourself. Salt is nasty. I had a plan that I was going to get up and do that, but I tried it on Wednesday, and I started coughing, and then I had salt in my mouth, and I couldn't talk anymore. So I thought that would have, you would not have forgotten it, that salt by itself is nasty. But you wouldn't have had any more sermon. Jesus knows this. Jesus knows that salt by itself is nasty and that salt must penetrate and be ingrained in what it seeks to change and seeks to keep from decay. And that's why he says in verse 13, you are the salt of the earth, but if salt has lost its taste, how can its saltiness be restored? It is no longer good for anything, but is thrown out and trampled underfoot. Jesus gives his people a warning that day. He says, you are salt. By being with me, that's what you are. I made you salt. Whether you like it or not. It's not that you had to do anything to become salt, but what you do have to watch out for is that you would lose your salt, that you would lose your saltiness. Then you become good for nothing but to be trampled out underfoot. These are harsh words that Jesus says. But listen to them. Don't get involved in the lives of other people. Be salt. There's a fear that maybe we would become corrupt ourselves, or that maybe we would become corrosive. That's not what Jesus is saying here. He's saying, listen, you are the salt of the earth. Stay connected to me, and then go and connect yourselves to others. Go and connect yourselves to this world. You may be afraid. You may be scared. But when you see people in decay, when you see this world that's corrupt, go and be salt to it. Go and preserve it. Go and give flavor. Instead of running away and hiding yourself, when you do that, you become worthless. You become salt with no purpose. Instead, do this. Go out and be salt. Go out and give life flavor. I look at this community that's formed here at Outreach Red Bank, and I think of all the wondrous gifts that people have and all the work that people are able to do with their hands. I think of the musicians up here. I think of our artists, our graphic designers, our sculptors, people who can write poetry, people who can write prose. You can give flavor and taste to this world. You can be salt to this world. Go out in this world and make something beautiful. There's a world that gets corroded and ugly, and it needs flavor and taste that only God can bring. And God's using your hands and using your words and using your eyes and using all of your gifts and talents. Go out and make something beautiful. Go out and give this world flavor and taste, because that's what God's given you to do, and you are his salt. Do any of you know someone, know a friend, a family member, an enemy, a brother, a sister, anyone who you see decaying in this world? Someone whose life is in trouble. Someone who over time you just see him going further and further into dark places, into bad places. Do you know what you are to this world? Do you know what you are to that person? You can be salt. The temptation would be to not get involved with someone who you see twisting in the wind, someone living life in dangerous ways, or someone that's really turning in on themselves. You can be salt to that person. Reach out to someone who you see that needs your help and be salt to them. God made you salt. Go out and preserve life. Go out and preserve and restore and keep people from falling into decay, because Jesus Christ has made us salt. After that, he goes to the next verse, and he says, not only are you the... Oh, go back one. That's okay. Not only are you the salt of the earth, but he gives us a second picture. He says, you are the light of the world. And I love this, because there's a huge contrast in these two images. And Jesus, I know this is a bit of an understatement, but he was an absolutely fantastic teacher and public speaker. He was gifted. I'll just put that out there. This analogy is so beautiful. He says we're salt. He says we're these tiny little grains that can get involved and make a change. And if you're listening that day, you're thinking, all right, I know I'm tiny. I know I'm just this little person on this huge planet, but I can be salt and I can go make some change. But if you notice, he says, you are the salt of the earth and you are the light of the world. He doesn't say salt of the earth, light of the earth, or salt of the world, light of the world, but salt of the earth and light of the world. There's two different words there. When he says salt of the earth, the word they use for earth means land. It's kind of a word that we get the word geography from. So salt of the earth is land. But when he says light of the world, the Greek word for world in this passage is cosmos, which is similar to our word for cosmos. Thank you. Nice. Universe. So he says, you're the salt of the earth. And then he says, you're the light of the cosmos, the light of the universe. So he comes to us and says, you're this tiny little thing, but let me ask you a question. You're also something else. What are the lights of the universe? Stars, sun, moon. Jesus looks to them and says, you are the lights of this cosmos. You are the lights of the universe. Has anyone ever told you that? Has anyone ever told you that the light you have is the light of the universe? Jesus Christ in the scriptures is called the light of the world. And in him, we are the lights of the world as well. And we get to shine his light. And Jesus says that to that ragtag crowd that day. You are the lights of the world. When they went home that night after that sermon, and they started walking and it got darker and darker and the stars came out. At a time before there was all this synthetic light at night, they would look up and see stars. And they would think to themselves, Jesus Christ just told me that I'm the light of the world. Isn't that amazing? Isn't that wonderful? That's what we get to be. We get to be his light. You are cosmic luminous forces. What does light do? Light has one main task. Light overcomes darkness. That's what light does. The people of God, the people that were hearing Jesus Christ that day, and those of you who are hearing me speak today, we are to be the light of the world. We are to be a people that seeks to overcome the darkness in this world. Now, how do we do that? I was thinking about that and thinking about where there's darkness in the world and how we can help. The first and most obvious thing that comes to light, and you see this over and over again in the scriptures, is that people who do not know God, people who have not tasted how good God is, people who have not seen his love or had a relationship with him, are people that the Bible depicts over and over again as people who are in darkness. That's the greatest darkness we face in this world, that we don't know God's love. And God's people are called to be light, to go out and tell people who God is, that he is the light of the world and that he loves them and that he's done something for them and that he has changed this world in his death and resurrection. And we are to be that light. What is outreach, if not that, of sharing with this world in darkness who Jesus Christ is, because he is the light, and without him we are in darkness. We are to be that light to the people that we come in contact with. I think of other ways that we're called to be light. Do any of you have a friend or an enemy or anyone else that you know who has stumbled into darkness. Maybe someone who has begun to follow Jesus Christ, but they get back and they hide back in the darkness after the lights hit them, and they'd rather be in darkness instead of light. Do you know anyone like that? Or do you know someone who does things that hurt themselves and others and sit in darkness and don't know how terrible the things that they do to themselves, their bodies, their friends are? Those are people in darkness. And you can be a light to go and show that light to them and show them that what they're doing is not good for them. That's what we're called to be. Do you know someone, maybe your child or a friend of yours who's a few years younger than you, or a student that you work with in one of the ministries here, or an aging parent, or anyone who doesn't know what the future brings? Someone who looks ahead of themselves. Maybe they've been a Christian for a little bit, if they're a young student, and they don't know what happens next, or they're afraid about going off to college, or you're trying to love and care for an older adult who's entering the final stages of their life, and they don't know what's coming up next. There are people all over and all walks of life here that don't know what their future holds, that are scared of the future, that are scared of what comes next. Jesus Christ says, you are the light of the world. You can come along someone and disciple them. You can come along someone and light their path and show them the next steps. If you're a high school leader or a junior high leader or a college leader, I hope you hear these words, the power that you have to be light for people that are a few years behind you. You can walk ahead of them and light the way for them and show them and help them and guide them to see what comes next, because you are the light of the world. That's what we are. That's what Jesus Christ has made us. Now, I mentioned this beforehand, and you can go to the next verse. When he gives salt, when he talks about salt, he gives us this warning. But when he talks about light, he does something a little bit different. Here are verses 14 and 15. You are the light of the world. A city built on a hill cannot be hid. No one, after lighting a lamp, puts it under the bushel basket, but on a lampstand, and it gives light to all in the house. With salt, he gave a warning. But with light, he says, light cannot be stopped. No one would put light under a basket, and a city on a hill cannot be hidden. When we live as light for this world, light cannot be overcome. Light cannot be hidden. And we get to be that light that can't be stopped. What I love about these two images is that they are kind of heads and tails. They kind of bring the picture together beautifully. Something very, very tiny and something very, very huge of salt and light. And we get to be both of those things in our lives and how we follow Jesus Christ. We get to live as salt and light. And we do that by coming alongside this world as salt, where you walk among people. You walk among people who are suffering. You walk among this world that needs to know God. You walk among this world that's in decay, and you get to be salt to it, walking side by side with all the other people in this world, almost like secret agents living together with the rest of this world that needs to know God. And you are salt. You preserve them. You make this life beautiful. You show them taste and flavor. And at the same time, we come to this world as light. We come to a world that's dark, and we shine a bright light at it and show this world where the darkness is, and then they can overcome the darkness as well. And we show them the light that is Jesus Christ that overcomes all darkness. Now, I put some pictures and images out there as how we can be salt and light. And one thought I had when thinking through this and contemplating all of these things is just the fact that we feel like we fail at this all the time. That maybe we know we should be salt, and maybe we know we should preserve life, but we get scared. Or maybe we know we can make something beautiful, but for some reason we don't do it. Or maybe we know that we're called to be light, but sometimes we get ourselves into darkness. I want to conclude by just sharing with you one more thing. And that is, the man who spoke these words, Jesus Christ, he lived these words as well. In the Gospel of Matthew, he gives this beautiful sermon about what life is supposed to be like in the kingdom, and how we'll love one another, and how we'll care for another, and what the new law of Christ will be. A law that is put on men and women's hearts. And after he says these words, he goes out and lives as salt in life. He comes to people who are hurting, who are broken, and he heals them. He preserves them and restores them. He preserves a woman in adultery. He gives sight to the blind. He preserves the crippled and the broken, and he heals them and restores them. He calls the dead to life. He lives out his life being salt and light. He is the light of the world, and he shines it into darkness. And if we would know how to be salt and light, we need to cling to him. And we need to continue to read his scriptures and continue to see how he lived as salt and light and follow his example. Just as I called us previously to light the path for others, we need to constantly be following him and letting him light our path. He was the light of the world. He is the light of the world. And he shined light into darkness. And so many people who were in darkness came to him and embraced that light. And many other people hated that light so much and continued to deny that light so much that they sought to extinguish that light. And that's what they did with Jesus Christ. They took him and they tried to crucify that light. And they put him on a hill on the outskirts of town and crucified him there. But a city on a hill could not be hidden. And a cross on a hill at the edge of town could not be hidden either. And it just shined brighter. So they took that body and they put it in the earth to try to extinguish that light. But 3 days later, the tomb rolled away and the light shone again. And it was more powerful and vibrant than it had ever been because the light of the world conquered death. And that light shines today, and it shines in us, and we're to be that light to this world. I want to share one more picture. At the very end of the scriptures, at the end of the book of Revelation, you can go home and look at this. Another man, another follower of Jesus Christ, John, who talks about Jesus being the light of the world all the time, he talks about a day that will come when the kingdom will finally come in all its full power and glory and majesty. That this world that's been so susceptible to decay and corruption will be renewed and restored. And John talks about a day that's coming when a city will come down from heaven and come here to earth. And he says in that day, there will be no night. He says in that day, there will be no sun or moon or stars. There will just be light, because in the center of that city is Jesus Christ, the light of the world. That is the day we wait for. And until that day, we live as salt and light to this world in hopes of hastening that day that the whole world will see his light, his power, and his majesty and his glory. Let's pray.